Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast with me. Got some exciting stuff coming up, and I wanted to share that with you. Number one, we're going to be in Portugal this May. We're going to be in the Seattle, Washington area this summer, and all the tickets and information are listed in the description below. And I'm very excited to do these seminars. As you guys know, it's really a change of the world for me and the people that are there. So I'm so excited to come out to meet you guys and be there. This is an excellent podcast with somebody who is dealing with resource guarding, as well as integrating two dogs, as well as figuring out if this is the right dog for them as they foster this dog. And are they going to be a victim, air quotes, of a foster fail? So I hope you guys enjoy this podcast as usual. At the end of the podcast, I'm going to be answering three of your dog training questions. If you guys are listening to this and you have a very specific question for me that you want me to answer, head over to the iTunes review chart right now and leave me a review. And in that review, you can leave me a question and I'll answer it next podcast. Enjoy this podcast. Thank you guys so much. All the love, and we'll talk to you at the end. What's going on?
We have a situation with a new rescue that we adopted in December, and he's guessed to be about 5 and was found wandering on the streets in Texas. And we brought him home to be the bestie to our current dog, who will be 5 in April. And instead, we got his own live-in bully. And he has been attacking him, and it has just been increasing and increasing. And it started off with food, but now it's also excitement. He's attacked him over a frisbee. Our other dog barks at the window, and he'll attack him now when he's barking at the window. And so we're reaching out because this behavior is out of our wheelhouse.
Okay. So to back up just a little bit, your new foster, mm-hmm. you have is being bullied, or your
the other way around.
Okay, so your new foster is bullying your current dog.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we have Boris is the older dog. Otto is the new foster, and I wouldn't describe it as. Well, the big problem that we have, because there is kind of just some bullying going on, but the big problem that we have started out over food. And what you can see with Otto, the foster, is that when we're preparing a meal, he will start to shake, and then he will attack Boris. And I don't mean a mild attack. He will attack.
Okay.
This is my husband, Corey. I don't
know. Hello. Good to meet you, Tom.
Hey, Corey. Nice to meet you as well. Okay. So what other circumstances are they getting into it over the food? And is there anything else in particular?
Now it's led to he feels like he can attack him over the frisbee in the backyard. And then when Boris barks at the window, he doesn't like that either. And so he'll attack Boris for barking at the window. And overall, when he walks around the house and they're together, he kind of keeps him in check and always goes up to him like, hey, kind of bossy now. We used to think that it was kind of playful because he was advertised to be like the most playful dog and got along with everybody. And so we were like, I don't know, is he being playful? Is he not? And now I know that he's actively like trying mm-hmm. to control and be the boss of Boris, who ironically is the much larger dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that it started out over just food, just over mealtime. And then it progressed. One time it's happened when I was just going to use a treat for training, and it happened then. And then it progressed to the Frisbee and happening at the window. And so it, probably for the first 2.5 months, it was just happening very, very irregularly over food. But the last 4 weeks, over food, it started happening almost all the time. And then it started happening in those other instances.
Okay. And it also seems to be just with Boris. Us people can take everything away from him. He leaves things. He will wait for his food. I can take anything away from him and swap it out with something else. I'm good about giving him a positive reward for leaving things. And so everything kind of seems to be aimed at Boris.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So in the beginning, you didn't see it and it progressed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's typical. And the reason why sometimes that happens is the dog just becomes more of themselves. They become more comfortable. They become more confident. They become more opportunistic. So these things are common under these circumstances. And, you know, it's frustrating to say the least. So is your overall goal to keep this foster, or is it to find a new home?
If it's possible. I mean, right now it's really bad, and I can't say that finding a new home is out of the question. But if ultimately he's the perfect dog not in our home and he can be an only child without having to go through any trauma, and we're happy to find him that perfect place.
But I think right now we're trying to keep him here in our home. But last week, Ione got in the middle of one of the attacks and her hand got
Don't
bit.
Do that.
And
we
had to go to the hospital, and everything was okay. But I would say at this point, Ione is pretty tense about it all.
Sure.
Which is totally understandable. But it's you know, it's created a bad environment.
I'm not helping. Because I'm keeping them all separate. I'm not letting any dog cross paths, like bring any food prep. Like, we're kind of in lockdown mode over here.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Okay. And so let's just start going over. So my objective and my goal during these consulting calls is to give you options and to give you some sort of game plan, some sort of roadmap in order to try to be successful here. So a couple things that we'll talk about in the beginning is resource guarding. So I don't know how much you guys have been researching this. I'm sure you have, but resource guarding is like what we can start, you know, describing these things from a dog behavioral standpoint. Is a dog is guarding things that they find of value, right? So sometimes oftentimes it's food that's the highest value. Sometimes it's space. Sometimes it's people. Sometimes it's attention. I mean, anything that can be of resource and value to a dog can become protective over it. And the good thing about the situation in particular with Otto is that you aren't seeing it with you. So it's subjective and or it's environmental, right? So it's not consistent, which is, and in this case, the inconsistencies in the resource guarding is actually kind of good because there is control, right? So if you wanted to come in and take something from him, he's like, yeah, I'm cool with that. But then if Boris wants to come take something, he's like, I'm not cool with that. So there is, there is a sense
of... And it's weird because there's he'll share sticks and stuff in the backyard. But yeah, it's so random. Yeah.
Well, it could be random, but it's also just think about it like this. Try to think about it as value. So don't think of it as, it could be random because I don't know all the content. You could say, well, it's not with sticks. And then I could say, well, that's not really that valuable. And then you could say, but it's also with walking by somebody. I'm like, okay, then it is random. But to me, from a dog behavioral standpoint, it's value. So what is a value, right? So again, a stick, maybe not something too, it doesn't taste that great. It's nothing that they're going to digest and eat and find nutrition in. So they might not value valuable.
Okay.
Therefore, you'll see this very different play and different interaction of an object or something, mm-hmm. but you're not seeing the resource guardian because there is no guardian there. It's like the difference between somebody having real gold and fake gold. It's like, I don't really care about the fake gold because there's no value there, right? So just kind of think about that too as you go through this conversation. And the next thing, you know, that I think we should talk about is the bullying. So that's kind of a byproduct of what you're dealing with as well. So again, like the window type of attacks or bullying is not so much resource, right? It's like, what's the resource here? It's more like what I call policing, right? So bullying, policing, and it's very like, I don't love to use this term because it's pretty outdated as far as like how dog owners such as yourself would think about this, but it's kind of like this pack mentality where, think of pack mentality of like a social structure. So like, you know, mom, dad, brother, sister, uncle, aunt, like all these things have different, you know, coach, colleague, whatever. They're all different pieces in our lives that are part of our social structure. And some of those people are going to have influence in our lives in other areas, right? So again, like a coach may have a huge impact in some individuals. And then maybe your flight attendant doesn't or whatever, you know what I mean? With dogs, they have this like intimate social structure, which would mean the people in like their immediate family, like, you know, of course you trust your partner more than the random person on the street, or you have a relationship with them versus that person. So sometimes with dogs, we see this social structure start to unravel, and not in a bad way, just kind of open itself to us and go over things. And so what that means in this circumstance is Boris could be having a good old time barking at the people walking by like he normally does. And, you know, Otto comes running up and says, hey, let's stop having fun. I don't want you to do that. So there's part of that like social structure where he's not trying to kill the other dog, but he's trying to let the dog know what's appropriate and what's not. And so part of this process of the social structure or implementing another dog into a new home, sometimes it goes away because they learn from each other. It's just like human behavior in a sense of social structure. Like what is somebody like versus not, right? So how long have they been together now? Did you say 5 months?
Since the beginning of December.
Okay. So not a short period of time, but not extremely long. So I guess my point is something to think about, right? So like, you know, almost all of dog behavior and even training is subjective, right? It's very dependent and predicated off of the individual dog under those circumstances with the breed, the sex, the age, et cetera. So, I guess the reason why I'm saying that is because sometimes when a dog comes into a home, they try to, again, like in the beginning, it's like, hey, this is your place. Cool. This is nice. And then it's kind of like a movie where you just see this person start to change and you see them start to become a little different where now they're eating your lunch in your fridge and they're wearing your favorite coat and they're things like that, right? Yep. They're signing into your Netflix account. They're getting more comfortable. They're getting more comfortable. And then slowly, if you have a person that's more, let's say passive, less confrontational, okay, fine, sure, right? We know those people and there's plenty parts in our lives that's probably happened. But so with dogs, it's very similar where they kind of like change the guard, if you will, where another dog comes in and starts to boss the other one around. And eventually now Boris is walking away when Otto comes into the room. Boris is shying away from Otto when there's any value. These things are sad to see from a dog owner's perspective, but it's very, I just want you to know, it's a very natural behavior in the dog world. And really what it comes down to is the dog's dynamic. So dynamic is something that you can try your best to kind of match make, right? But there's no guarantees that things are going to work out. And so, so there's pack dynamic, right? So again, when I say pack, think about social dynamic of like, you know, who gets along with who and why. There's all sorts of studies and research that we kind of have come to the conclusion of why these things work. So it's kind of like that with dogs. And there's things that you can, there's things that are in your control and things that are not in your control. So things that you can do is, you know, obviously advocate for Boris. We're going to get into some of the more granular training in a moment. But I'm just kind of rolling out some things off the top of my head. So you can start advocating for Boris. So to give you a perfect example, I just got a new puppy. He's about 14 weeks old. He's a mastiff breed. I have a Dutch Shepherd. I don't get to decide whether or not they like each other. You know, and I want you to know that, because sometimes when people see my really well-trained shepherd and see her do three different language commands and do all this fancy stuff, sometimes people just assume a trained dog is trained universally about everything. And training is just obedience. So just because somebody obeys you doesn't mean they like something, right? And so again, I'm starting to have these conversations with people about this relationship that they have, because I don't have really any say in that. I don't. If when he matures and he turns 8 months and he's intact and he starts to feel a certain way and his testosterone starts running through his body and, you know, he starts to pick on her or have conflicts with her, they're both going to be competitively flashy trained and they'll listen to me, but it doesn't change how they feel about each other. And that's something that's really important. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I've
been wondering.
And circling back to what you said too, in terms of just the evolution of Otto, we've definitely just seen that in terms of, you know, the early stages. I mean, he came off the street. He was just trying to figure out what it was like in our home at all. The weird part was how the more time and the more comfortable he got in our home, then he got less comfortable with the food situation, and you'd see him just start to shake and then do the attack thing. And that part was really, well, certainly disturbing, but also it was really odd how you would get, you know, more time in the home and then have that behavior start.
Yeah, I would agree. And like I said, it's, you know, sometimes there is no direct answer as much as we can summon what we think is happening. So my speculation would be that animals in general have this natural instinct to kind of like fill a certain role sometimes, and they kind of fill that shoe, and sometimes it kind of overtakes their what they want to do, like their will versus like what they really want, right? And so sometimes I've seen dogs like do certain things that they don't really want to do in a social construct. And then also there's things too that you have to take into consideration too, is there's comfortability, right? So it's just like with kids, right? My son runs around the house screaming with his shirt off as loud as he wants. And I bring him outside and he can't even say hi to somebody, you see what I'm saying? So like, there's this comfortability. And then if the person's around long enough, he can't stop talking to them, right? So it's this comfortability that dogs will have too, is sometimes you don't see that. And so it could have been there since day one. You just never saw it. Yeah. So for you, it's new, and it's puzzling. It's confusing. It's frustrating. It's sad. It's all these things that we emotionally feel. But the reality is he could have been doing that since day one. Who knows?
I'm sure. And we just didn't know how to take it. Yep.
And he wasn't comfortable enough to do it. So
So
sometimes too, just on this behavior, just so you know, is it becomes sometimes involuntary. So some dogs will feel a certain way and they just can't help it. And it could... There's many reasons, right? And again, I'm really big on like just being real. Like I'm not going to sit here and tell you why these things could happen, but let's say I can point out some things that could have happened. Let's say and this just is like in general, again, I don't know how much background you know on Otto, but sometimes, you know, if they're raised on the street or they're raised in a very abusive surroundings where they can't eat and they have to fight for their food and things like
that.
Yeah, exactly. So
he's pretty scarred up. He's got scars on him.
He has physical scars in addition to
So both good, like, right? Like, sometimes I say I'm not going to act like I know, but in this case I knew, so that's cool. But and that's really what it comes down to, right? With anybody as a professional, it's just my experiences, mm-hmm. right? And so I think that I've seen this several times before, where this involuntary behavior starts to peak out because okay, food. Okay, this is what they're either going to get. It's kind of like fight or flight. They're either going to get killed because they're near the food, or they fight. And with Boris being this house dog that was raised with three hots in three hots in a cot, if you will.
Exactly.
He's like, dude, just look at him. Yeah. Just look at him cute and you'll get this stuff. Like, it's no big deal.
Exactly.
So then you get Otto that's like, oh, food, there's food. And he starts to shake and he's conflicted and he doesn't know which way to go. And he doesn't want to do this and he doesn't want to be a bet. And then boom. And there's almost like, it's kind of like somebody, you know, in human behavior, I always try to relate this with psychology in humans, is it's kind of like somebody who's been in the penitentiary for 20 years or whatever, right? Getting them out of that routine and then back into the public is difficult, you know, because I'm just using that one example. It's like anything else, military or whatever. You're just in this routine and you're locked in. And now it's like, hey, don't act like that anymore. It's like, it's not that easy. Especially if it's derivative off of the will to survive.
Yeah.
It's pretty ingrained, right? Where imagine every time that there was food around, whether it's on the streets and it's cheeseburgers or whatever, and then, you know, all of a sudden there's this, you know, there's food involved and then there's another dog that's going to try to kill you for it. You just, So that's kind of like the why. Okay. So that's what I like to talk about, because some people are scratching their head like you guys, like, I don't really understand. And these are some things that could dial it in. I'm not sure 100%, right? I'd have to dive into it, you know, in person and really, but these are the things, right, that typically happen because of these reasons. And so the next step is, what do we do? And there's a couple things. Again, keep in the back of your mind two big things. I mentioned it earlier, but the first thing is it could be also, like you guys said, like, if this dog is going to be perfect in somebody else's home, it might be better for this dog to be in that home, because if he's perfect with you guys without the situations and conflict with Boris, then if he goes to a single no dog household, he will probably be perfect. But that doesn't I'm just saying that it doesn't mean that that's
no,
what
that's
it has.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that that's what it has to be, and you guys have plenty of time. Okay. There is no, I think a lot of people in these situations, they have so much anxiety about, I got to make a move fast. I got to, you know, make a decision. And a lot of times, as long as you can keep the dog safe, you can try to dial this in and figure it out at your pace.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's, don't be so hard on yourself, because that's what a lot of dog owners do. I do that too, just not with dogs. So, you know, it's about the only thing in life I'm pretty, you know, good at. So, patient. So, the next thing is just, you know, what type of relationship will they have in the future? Because, you know, if they kind of have these back and forths, I'll ask you this question in a moment, but you know, there's a big difference between corrections and like fights, and I'll give you the definition, my definition, and then you can, it'd be easier to do it that way. So corrections are going to be dogs kind of going after each other. It sounds violent. It sounds like they're going to walk away with blood dripping out of them and it's nasty. And the reality is they either don't have any of that, or they have a little nick. And a lot of times they're not latching and shaking and trying to kill. They're just trying to correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which end do you, is it more, what do you feel?
I feel like he's trying to take Boris out. Like, I feel like he is going for Boris. Okay. I mean, I know from the times that I've tried to separate him and I had to go, I thought he broke my finger. Like, he's really trying to go for broke with Boris. We've seen dogs, you know, kind of do that where their faces are together and they're trying to work that out. I feel like Otto is fully, if he were bigger,
I'm not sure about like the window and the Frisbee. Those could be corrections. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit hard to tell with Otto just yet, partly because of the other issues. With the food, it's not a correction.
Yeah.
He's going for blood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's good to know. I would just say there's a couple things. Okay. So there's rehabilitation. So you could rehab you can modify it. It is possible. It's challenging. It's difficult. It's sometimes dangerous. It's definitely stressful. Because you're trying to take this instinct and this primal feeling away from the dog. And sometimes it's possible, but a lot of times it just doesn't work, right? There's these realities of, taking the street out of the dog is not something that's going to happen, but you can really shine him up to pretty close, but it's some of that's still there.
Yeah.
And so there's the management of it, which would be just the idea that you guys can manage it, which is what you're doing now. So you're cautious of, and I'm saying these things out loud, assuming you already did these things, but there's, picking up the bones, picking up the treats, picking up the chew toys, making sure that they're not eating in the same room. There are certain things that you can try to find triggers on. So if there's specific triggers that you're seeing with the dogs, so the window, the food, and anything else really, there's certain amounts of management that you can do to make it a healthy and happy coexistent. And this is something that's not talked about a ton in the dog training space, which is kind of sad because everyone just assumes you can fix everything, and that's 100% not the case. It's you could fix a lot of things and change a lot of things, but the reality is when it comes down to personality, it's you can't change personality, right? It's like, I want to be an NBA star and I'm 5'5". Probably not going to work out. Hate to tell you. Right? Yeah. So there's certain things with genetics and their upbringing and all that you just can't change. The management side, so going through like the actions, what can we do? There's, again, the management, which is going to be countering with some sort of control and obedience. So oftentimes when I talk to dog owners, when they have any type of problem, they don't have core foundation. And what that means is like there's different levels to obedience. There's level 1, 2, and 3 to make it easy. Off leash is 3. It's like Yoda stuff. Your dog's running at a full sprint at a ball and you go down and the dog goes into a down, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Level 1 is going to be your basic obedience in a controlled environment on leash with motivation. Okay. So it's like really easy to help the dog be successful without a lot of variables. So just to kind of give you that gauge, oftentimes dog owners come to me with level 3 problems and a behavioral standpoint with level 1 obedience. And then the behavioral side of like level 3 problems is the dog hates other dogs. They're never going to like other dogs or people. And you have to have level 3 obedience in order to manage that. You're not at that level. It's just, I'm just giving you a gauge here. And so if you had good obedience, you can counter a lot of the situations that are happening. So let's say this, give you an example. Okay. You're in your living room or your kitchen. Okay. You're getting ready to feed Boris. Otto comes in, he starts to do his thing. So there's, if you had level 3 obedience, you can say, Otto, go to your crate, Otto, go to your place, Otto, go to your bed, Otto down, Otto sit, Otto stay, stopping everything. 100% stopping everything, right? But here's the thing, here's the caveat to that is, it doesn't fix the problem, but it fixes the stress that you guys will have.
This fixes the situation at least.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
So that's a really big piece. Literally, you guys, like I get approached all the time with book companies and this, that, and the other thing. And I'm always like, that's it. It's a couple sentences. And that's really where it lies is there's either modifying or changing it, which we'll talk about, but it's probably not. The reason why I asked you before about if you think it's corrections or you think it's like out for blood, because usually if it's out for blood, it's not going to be modified, and that's okay. That's probably 50% of the behavioral stuff I deal with. But anyway, having that really good control is crucial. So that's what we call management, right? Another term by definition is suppression, right? So we're suppressing what the dog wants to do with control. It's just like showing up to Disneyland and the kid wants to run across the parking lot and get in to see Mickey Mouse as fast as they possibly can, but you say no. We're going to get the cooler. We're going to get the cars. We're going to do this. You got to get your lunches. Hold mommy and daddy's hand. Like, it's suppression. Yeah. There's all sorts of it out there. Same thing when we're sitting at a red light. Well, guess what? We're late. We want to go through it, but we don't. Suppression.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's interesting that you use that word because I do feel like ever since we got Otto, that he's been suppressing himself. Mm-hmm. And you'll see it in terms of when he goes outside, he'll run for like one lap and then he's done. And I feel like he always doesn't want to let loose. Mm. And I think that part of this is kind of we're seeing him let loose a little bit.
Okay.
And he will, like we have in the past, as we've been trying to work through this, have him be out of the kitchen. So that's the command. Out of the kitchen. Boom. He's out.
Yeah.
But if you miss the moment, maybe it's the moment of suppression, you know, then he loses his mind and he's, and at that point you just need to separate.
Yeah. So it's making a lot of sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good point. There's levels to that, right? So there's levels of obedience. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was saying, like that level three, just making sure that you can stop your dog in their tracks. But it's it's been really sequenced over the sequence, meaning proofing. It's been practiced. It's been proven. Mm-hmm. Meaning you're throwing treats, you're throwing balls. The dog is on a full tilt sprint, and you can stop them. Right. So there's all that control.
Yeah.
I've only had one dog like that.
We used to have a dog like that.
Yeah. Sometimes you get lucky and sometimes you just have to put in a lot of work, but either way you can get there. Yeah. So there's that, right? So there's the obedience side where that's where the management comes in, where you are managing, right? So again, that's a big important part. So just again, to give you the amount of people that either pay for my training or sign up or message me or comment or whatever across the platforms and just say, how do I stop this? And it's not, it doesn't happen. It's like, how do I stop getting fat? It's like, well, there's, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. There's nutrition, there's exercise, there's all of this stuff. So it's like, how do I stop something, right? And I'm just using that example. How do I stop something I don't want to happen? And the reality is you got to find the reason and the cause. And so that's the management side, is using obedience. It is sustainable because, you know, if you're like, again, like with my puppy and my shepherd, I don't know how they're going to interact with each other when he gets grown up. Right now they're doing pretty good, but like there's a lot of management I have to do now because puppy doesn't know the boundaries. Right. And that's kind of like where I have to step in and advocate. So there's certain times where, you know, if he wants to go over and try to take her Frisbee while she's standing up and she's ready to play, I'm going to allow that to happen because if she corrects him, it's going to be like, hey, get out of here. Let me play. Now, if she's in her crate eating food and he comes try to get her food out of her crate, that might be a completely different situation, right? So my point by saying this is I have a level zero dog right now as this puppy. He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know any obedience. Mm-hmm. He's just figuring out how to live with people. And there's a lot of management I'm doing mainly because I'm at the level that a lot of people are at. Zero control, zero obedience, zero relationship, right? As far as like communicative relationships, hey, come back here, stay here, you know, things like that. So, so that's what you guys can start doing is start using obedience and really auditing, you know, how much time you can put into obedience training. What types of obedience you can have to make things more successful. So if it were my house, my situation, they'd be fed at the same time, you know, in that window, they'd be separated once, you know, it could be anything. Like everyone's situation is different. For me, it's crates because that's what crates are invented. It's just another tool. You're going to go in your crate and eat. And same thing with puppy. Like he's in his crate and eating because I don't want my dog Lakota going in his crate to try to get his food because he's going to not understand that she's going to come in, show her teeth and say, this is mine. And he's going to go, oh, hey, how's it going? And then she's going to nail him, and, you know?
Yeah.
So times where I can step in, I will, but oftentimes it's just kind of like letting nature take their course. And he's the type of dog, again, I'm doing this because I want him under her thumb because he's going to get 200 pounds and I want him to be afraid of her. I 100% do. I want him to have this, oh boy, I don't want to get in trouble, even though she's... Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So there's that management that you guys can do. And like I said before, oftentimes people have a level 3 behavioral problem with zero obedience and control. So you guys can kind of, you know, audit that, you know, in your head. But I think that's a big piece. Is that obedience. So again, under any circumstance, let's say, again, another example, Boris is at the window barking. You can hear Otto ripping around the corner. Otto, come. Done. Things like that, like certain situations where somebody drops a piece of food when you have friends over and all of a sudden they're both going for it. Otto, come. So those are things that are going to help manage the situation, although it's not going to stop what could happen if things... you know, go full blown there where they both meet at the stake and Otto's like, I'm going to kick your butt. And Boris is like, okay. So the second part to that outside of management comes the obedience is the behavior modification process, which I'll talk about briefly because it takes days to explain it. But the idea is to counter conditioning and technically is the changing the dog's emotional state in response to something. I use counter obedience a lot. Like that's what I was explaining before is counter obedience. I'm using obedience to counter a potential problem or fight or safety issue, right? So if my dog is running across the street and I see a car coming, I'm using counter obedience to recall my dog instead. Counter conditioning is changing the dog's emotional state in response to something, which is the ultimate goal in this situation. But because the emotional state of the dog and where it's coming from is so ingrained and so innate and so primal, there's only so much you can do, especially for just everyday average dog owners who just love their dogs and have other jobs and aren't professionals and, you know, have a life. So, you know, that's the advantage of hiring a dog trainer in that situation. But so the counter conditioning process is essentially, I'm thinking in my head, like, what would I do? Okay, here's the first thing I would do. Because this dog doesn't have any issues with you guys in this circumstance and has no redirection issues, I would be working on basically having Boris in the room with being handled by somebody, okay? And then I drop a piece, I'm just talking out loud, going through this. Drop a couple pieces of kibble on the ground with Boris. Otto knows that there's food in the room. Otto knows that there's kibble in the room, whatever treats you decide, whatever. And then, and then Otto would do whatever he wouldn't want to do. And then I would pay him when he looked at you. So essentially fast tracking that would be when there's food present with Boris, Otto gets paid. So we're trying to change the emotional response. The problem that you're dealing with currently, and you might deal with forever, is the competition, the competitive side. The natural competition that animals have to this, right? So Otto sees the food in the ground and says, hey, I can bully Boris. I can have my cake and eat it too. I'm going to go fight him for this food and then I'm going to come back and get food from somebody else. So the leash is very, very important in this situation because it keeps the dog safe. So as this gets better, you can get more realistic. And the realistic long-term vision and idea and scenario would be putting the food bowl down for Boris to eat any meal and Otto's looking at you for his food instead of going to Boris's food. To me personally, that's just a way to start countering the response, the emotional response that Otto has with Boris. But to be honest, I wouldn't ever look at that as a realistic situation. I would just be working on that one exercise to change the response. Cause I'm still going to feed my dogs in their crates because it's just not worth it. Like you always have to look at the risk over reward always. Again, like when I bring my Dutch Shepherd's raw food into her crate and I got the puppy trailing me, I shut the door. I'm like, nope, can't come in here. Cause it's just not worth it. You know? Yeah. That doesn't mean that I can't feed them next to each other. It doesn't mean that they, you know, have an issue with it. I just am not naive to natural canine behavior when it comes to raw, ground up chicken.
Yeah.
Would you suggest, so right now what we're doing with meals is that as Ion's preparing, we have, well, both of them actually leashed up because Boris has no sense of the world and he'll just wander around.
Yeah, no self-preservation. Just wanders right over. Like, why are you over here on a leash?
So we have Boris leashed up and I'm with Otto on a leash, with the idea that if we can continue to sensitize Otto to this situation and try to get him to relax, that will help. But then Ion feeds Boris. I have Otto in a sit, having him wait until well, Ion puts down the tray and I give him the command to release him to eat. Do you think that that's a good situation, a way to handle it, or not?
Where is Otto eating when you say you release him to eat?
They're across the room from each other, so everybody's had their own space always while eating. But so then I'll put down Boris's food and then immediately walk over and put down Otto's food, and then Corey has Otto on a leash and then makes him wait and then releases him and is okay, and you can eat too. So they're both kind of eating simultaneously
Across the room.
across the room. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I think, that's a good way to do it.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-hour energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Two things. So first thing is try to think of a way that you can do this more I want to say continuously, but I want you to, so okay, so a lot of people say like, oh, in this situation, like you guys can only work on this twice a day because the dogs only eat twice a day. So with the kibble or the food, you can do the same exact thing that you're doing. You could just do it 50 times a day. So you would just get a couple pieces of kibble or a couple pieces of treats and just put the bowls down. They're still going to be happy to eat it, even though it's not their full meal. So that's something to think about too. The other thing too that you can do is, like, again, talking out loud, like I was saying before, is again, it's pretty much the same thing, but you can put Boris's food down, have Otto on a leash, and then instead of like putting him into obedience queue, you would just you're looking for Otto's response to come to you, not what Boris is doing. So the moment that Otto gives you his attention while Boris is eating in the room, you would then put the food down and pay him. You wouldn't necessarily do like a sit stay. So you want
Yeah,
to,
yeah.
yeah. So you want to pay him for attention and not necessarily obedience. And this will start the, because that's where the counter conditioning will come in, where his response to say, hey, I'm going to look at you. Oh, boom, we get paid. So the sit stay is definitely a good way to do it. There's no doubt, but it's part of the management process. And I would just recommend, if you wanted to make it probably more ingrained, I would do more of the response of what you want the dog to do alternatively, which is give you attention instead of freak out about Boris.
Okay, that's
Awesome.
great.
Yeah, that's great.
And you guys can do this, like, again, you can sit there on two chairs across the room and have a treat pouch. And let's say Boris is, this isn't really about Boris, but Boris is over there getting paid from somebody. And every time, and Otto's just giving you attention. Yes, boom. Yes, good. Yes, good. Yes, good. Two things will happen. The duration is important to how long you can keep Otto on you while Boris is eating. The other thing is you'll start to close the distance of how close you can get Otto to feed while, or like Boris is feeding with you and the attention that you can grab. Because I have found in my experience that the actual distance between the dogs is an absolute indicator to potential resource guarding issues. It's an absolute factor into the equation of, if they're feeding on the other end of the house, they really don't care because there's no competition for this. But if they, in their head, think that they can have what Boris has and all they have to do is turn into the Green Hulk and go do it, that's where that anxiety comes in, the shaking. Oh, boy, I got to do this. I don't want to do this, right? So if you start countering that, like, hey, calm down. So right now there's this like stress level because you've only been working on it. Let's say you did it twice a day for, you know, a week, whatever, you know, that's 14 times when you could be doing it 50 times a day. And all you're doing is you're countering with the same value. The dogs don't realize like, okay, it's lunch. No. It's just like, we're working on something here. So pay attention. So anyway, those are things I would be doing. And then, you know, again, like, you also start working on obedience. So the next step, and or in conjunction with this, is Boris would be on leash with one of you. You pay Otto for looking at you, but then you give Otto a break and say, hey, what are you going to do while Boris is over there eating? So you're trying to change his emotional response to this anxiety, like, oh, I got to do this. No, you don't. Give him, get him freedom, give him on a long line. He starts walking towards Boris. Otto, come. He comes sprinting back to you. Yes. Boom. You pay him. So you start this response to, like, because again, here's what I find is like the idea that there's something else valuable in the room to guard is what creates the resource guardian. They just feel like they have to go and encapsulate it into themselves and nobody else can touch it. And once you start breaking down that response to say, hey, Boris is eating, and you can just take a slab of peanut butter and stick it into a bowl and put it on, and Boris can lick it for, you know, however long. And you can just recall Otto away. Say, hey, you don't have to.
Okay.
There's no attacking. You don't have to go see what he has. You just hang out with me. That's good for several different reasons, but the dog has to know recall. Also making sure that, this is a mistake that a lot of people will make, also making sure that you hold the dog accountable if they decide to blow you off is really important, because not only will the dog not come back, but you lose your place in line of respect. Just like with kids. Hey, it's time to do your homework. No. Hey, it's time to brush your teeth. No. And if there's a seriousness to it. I mean, my son just learned no. So he's saying no for everything, right? Yeah. What do you want for breakfast? No.
You know,
but once they actually know the impact of the word, it's a little bit different. It's a lot different, actually. So my point is you say Otto here or come. He knows that you've worked on it prior. Again, like developing those skill sets, developing a roadmap to what we're going to do to apply in this situation, right? We're not working on, hey, hold my hand in Disneyland parking lot. We're working on that everywhere until that point. Same thing with obedience with dogs, is we're working on a level of communication towards one another. So that way, when we apply it in real life, it makes sense. That's why anybody in the world goes through any type of schooling or education, just trying to figure out what to do and how. So it's the same thing with dogs, is Otto is presented with something, right? In this case, there's food in the ground, Boris goes for it. So the correction that you give Otto is very important, because if it's not effective, then he's just going to... So worst case scenario for Otto in that situation is you just ask him again. And that's not...
Okay.
Again, think about it with humans. Do it again. It's like, no, that's not how it works. So just making sure... And that's not a whole different conversation, but it's definitely a conversation where if you're sitting there on a long line and Otto is choking himself out to get to Boris and you're saying, Otto, come, you're just going to make things worse, because you're just confirming and validating to him that you are in the back seat, in fact, and he just is like, move out of my way. Let me do what I want. So just make sure that in that process, at a fundamental level, you would do this with no distractions, with no other dog. You would do this in your basement garage, or if Boris is in the other room, you get a long line out, you say, Otto, come. he doesn't, you correct him on the leash. He comes to you, you pay him. So fundamentally, he has to know the behavior before you correct him. And before, and you try to throw it out there, you know, in the real world, it's not going to happen. You have to practice it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Does this make sense?
Yes.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just taking some notes.
Yeah.
Cool. Cool.
And I have, I know Otto's trained, but yeah, I don't know training with Boris, like recall, like you said with Boris, that part I don't know.
Well, Otto's getting more trained. Initially, Otto knew sit, but you didn't know that he knew sit. Uh-huh. He wanted to push back every time unless he could get paid for it.
Yeah, it's what we call selective hearing, right? It's like
yeah.
And but listen, like, so the other thing to this too is the bullying and policing and the advocacy I mentioned earlier is there has to be some level of respect involved too, that is there, right? So him running after Boris that's just barking in the other room to police him, like, he should have some level, some filter in his head that you're there and it should matter. It should matter, right? So that's another thing too, is, you know, just at that fundamental level, the basic and even like the silly level of that sit that you were talking about, if a dog is, there's two things to that. If you're predicating your dog's obedience off of a reward-based system without anything else in there, that means that if there's any other reward in the equation, your dog can choose that, A, without knowing that it's bad because they were taught off of a reward system, and B, if they don't want the thing that you are offering them, it doesn't happen, just like what you just said. So if you say auto sit, he's like, nah, I'd rather not. And you're like, oh, here's a piece of food. And then the dog sits. That is predicated off of a reward-based system. It's not the dog actually knowing the behavior or respecting the behavior. But that's not good in itself because it's not sustainable and it's not real and it's going to fall apart with a little bit of water, right? It's just going to disintegrate. But the other thing is, the other thing is it's absolutely, and this is something that, like, I see, like, you got to think, this is coming from an individual who travels all over the world and works specifically with behavioral cases. Almost every single behavioral case I've seen, from Australia to England to the California to Florida, has been 95% affected off of what we're talking about right here. And that's your overall relationship with your dog, if it's predicated off of one thing or the other, is unhealthy. And things unravel really quickly because of that. It's the same thing with, let's say, if there's somebody out there that doesn't believe in reward-based systems and they only punish a dog, right? It's the same thing. Like, if you don't have your tool on, the dog's not going to listen. And sometimes it's the dog doesn't listen because they don't know it, or the dog doesn't listen because they're looking at you like, what are you going to do about it? Because this isn't on. So you got to have a really, and it's the same thing with human, you know, psychology. It's like, imagine raising a kid just off of love. And if they want to draw marker all over and put your phone into the water dish, you're like, oh, okay, just let them live. Like, you know, that's just call the CPS at that point. And it's the same thing on the other end of the spectrum where we're constantly yelling. We're not giving any, you know, it's just constant constructive criticism in a bad way. And the kid just feels not loved and not supported and there's no morale. And it's just like terrible, right? There's got to be this balance. I've never, I don't think, ever talked to any human being on the planet that really disagreed with that. I think the problem is dog owners don't really know how to apply it to their dogs. And so it's exactly what you guys are saying. It impacts your relationship significantly. And that's one of the biggest things that I could say with anybody's relationship is just make sure that it's not one-dimensional. Because that's the, it's like anything else, right? If a football player is only good at one thing, it's like, well, they're going to draft somebody else because of that. Or in martial arts, if the person's only good at one thing, they're going to get beat every single time. It's not going to work out. And it's the same thing with dog training. You want to have that good balance. So I guess just food for thought there as you guys are continuing this process and this journey of figuring things out. And to give it a real fair shot, I think you have to start to desensitize and counter condition Otto to Boris with food. And then any of the bullying stuff is going to come down to advocacy for making sure, like there's, again, I told you two different advocacies that I do, but for example, I do not let my puppy near my other dog while he's eating, she's eating. Mm-hmm. I'm advocating, mm-hmm. hey, this is not a good idea and you're a baby and you don't understand this. I posted this video on Instagram where Lakota, my Dutchie, was standing there with a Frisbee in her mouth and the puppy just kept jumping up and grabbing her face and picking on her. And I didn't say anything. There's a point of advocacy for you, like, hey man, like him going, so there's things that I would want my shepherd to put into place because I don't want that to happen in the future. It's very clear. I do not want this at some point 200-pound jacked bodyguard walking around my house thinking that nobody is over on top of him. But there's certain advocacy places. So for you guys, it's going to be about safety as it is for me and my dogs. So just make sure as you guys continue with your dogs that there's going to be advocacy. So Otto comes running at Boris when Boris is just trying to like play with a Frisbee or bark out the window. That's where you would step in and really correct that behavior because you should. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like your job is to advocate for Boris, where Boris is trying to live his life and Otto's trying to be this, you know, hard street dog. And you're like, hey, we're not doing that here. And once you start, once you start grinding that down, the reality is Otto should start to learn like what's appropriate and what's not. And and really, if he decides to say, you know what, mentally, you know what, I don't really care that you're barking, Boris, go ahead. Great. Or if he decides to say, I really want to come spear you through that window because you're barking, but I'm not going to because I don't want to get in trouble. Still just as good. You know, it's still just as good.
Tell the difference anyway.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. You're not going to be able to tell the difference. And those are really the two sectors that it's going to go down dependent on the dog's background behavior, etc. And that's what it comes down to. And that's all of my training has been successful doing that. I'm going to try to help you have a better decision-making process. And if that doesn't work, then I'm just going to let you know, hey, I know you want to do this, but we're going to quit that right now. And we're going to do something alternatively. And they're going to be like, yeah, but no, yeah, buts. And that's it. Yeah, so it's like you said, it's a win-win. So anyway, so that's a good game plan for you guys, I think, to start with.
And Otto, I do think, has a sweet heart in him. I think that the 5 years on the streets, I think that's what we're dealing with. I'm curious, though, and I know we've only been talking for a bit less than an hour. What do you think are realistic outcomes for us? How should we set our expectations?
So I would answer that question because it's, to me, honestly, you guys don't know what you have yet. So to me, you don't know what you have to be successful yet. So I'm just like, hey guys, you don't even have the foundation built yet. So I can't tell you how this house is going to look. And I say that optimistically. I think that that's very important to our conversations that we've had so far is what is your expectation? Well, it depends. Like right now, if this dog is literally doing everything against what you guys are saying and you're starting to let this dog take advantage of you, now he's starting to rule the house, then I'm going to say you're not even close to the point where you can see what Otto is because you're just letting him rule the house. So it's kind of like my whole branding of No Bad Dogs is people are always like, look how bad. And I'm like, no. Like, you don't even know this dog yet. You don't even know this dog. You don't know what they're capable of. You don't know what they're going to do if you correct them. You don't know what you're going to do if you reward them. Like, you just don't know. So I think you guys are, I think the expectation is going to be really dependent on how things go when you start to do some behavior modification here and say, Otto, this is how to live. Because Boris hasn't been sent to the vet, you know, six times after six attacks, I can tell you that you have a good opportunity to make things be coexistent, but you have to put in the work with Otto to help teach him that, and you have to get creative with it. So I think realistic expectation can go either way, just the way I explained in the beginning. You're either going to manage this, and Otto's just going to be this big bully around food, and that's just the way he is. And you're going to have to keep a close eye on him to, again, just like with kids, my son walks around and every 5 minutes he's getting into something. He's whatever. Yeah. It's like, it's the same thing with the puppy. It's like, it's life. It's like you're constantly managing. Yeah. I can't tell the puppy and tell the kid the baby not to be curious, not to check things out. They don't know.
Yep.
And so with Otto, it's kind of the same thing, is you have to just look and see what's going to happen and be smart. Or you guys can start the behavior modification process and the counter conditioning process and really help Otto deal with his anxiety and his aggression and his, really his response to something very valuable in the room with another dog, because nobody's ever walked him through that. That's the thing, is the best thing you guys have going for you is you have nothing going for you. Like, that's the best thing, is you haven't started. Like, when people come in and they're like having all these problems and I'm like, hey, how much training have you done? They said, well, you're my first trainer. I'm like, perfect, because you're going to be happy leaving here regardless, because you have nothing. So I think once you guys really start digging your heels in and figuring things out, you'd be surprised in how quickly things can go. So again,
super helpful.
It just depends on how much time you have, how skilled you are as handlers. It's like that with everything, right? Somebody's like, hey, I want to lose weight. I'm like, hey, if you do this 7 days a week, you're going to get faster results. You're going to get better results. But you know, I had a meeting and the kids and the after school sports and this, and I get it. It's like, how much time have we worked on this? It's not easy, but that's the reality. So be fair to each other. Be fair to each other in this relationship, because that's very important. Because I find dog owners to be so hard on themselves when they shouldn't be, right? It's not fair to be hard on yourselves because you haven't done anything. It's like, oh man, it's been happening for months. I'm like, yeah, but of accumulation, you've done it once a day when you could have been doing it 30 times a day. So just give yourself some grace there with that process, because as long as you guys are safe and you're keeping the dog safe, to me, it doesn't really matter how long it takes, as long as you guys know your thresholds of the amount of time and efforts you can put into it. And if you're super busy and you got so much going on, it's like there's times where it's going to fall to the wayside, but that's just something I'd say.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Super helpful. Thank you so much, Tom.
Gives us
some hope.
Well, I'm glad. And that's really what, you know, what I strive to do is I'm like, hey, I can help you. Just, and that's my passion. It's like people get into this, like on the edge of like, and I'm like, hey, I've done this literally thousands of times. Things can get better. It's just a matter of, is it going to be realistic for you and your family, for you and your life? You know, and that's another conversation. So, just keep at it and really, like I said, audit. Like, again, the big thing that dog owners make the mistake of is they're like, they immediately, first thing is they just let their dogs off leash. Like, oh, this isn't working. Otto, come. It's like, no. Leash on and then start to build that out.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. Well, thank you so much. We've seen lots of your videos and have used them so many times for Boris. So it's been very helpful. Thank you.
Good. No problem, guys. Best of luck. And thank you.
Thank you. Have a good rest of your day.
You too, guys. Cheers. Bye. You've reached the end of the podcast. Thank you for listening. I hope that you guys enjoyed that. I think it's a pretty good podcast. Lots of good information in there. First question comes from Peanut Butter. 5-star review, simple and consistent. Thank you. My question is would you, what would you look for in a pup as a parent with a small toddler between 12 and 18 months old? And what advice would you offer for balancing the needs of a pup with the needs of a toddler? I've been waiting for my baby to be less dependent on me to get a golden retriever pup, and I'm worried that I will set myself up for failure with a good game plan. It's a good question. If you're looking specifically for a breed, I think genetics are a huge role. I've talked about that many times before, but genetics are a really big role in what you're getting. You know, we recently had somebody get a golden retriever puppy that they paid a really good amount for, and the dog starting having behavioral problems and having resource guarding problems, and whether that's because of the breeder or it's because of the people or whatever, it doesn't really matter. The reality is that You need a good breeder that's gonna help you throughout the duration of the dog's life and give you feedback and help you and maybe even take the dog back if needed. This particular breeder absolutely ghosted this person and just said, "Hey, deal with it. This is your problem." So breeding genetics is number one. Make sure that the breeder is gonna back them. Like when I got my puppy Burley, for an example, like to give you guys, you know, if at any point I was like, "Hey, man, Burley, you know, I gotta move to Jamaica and I can't take him," they would take him back immediately. And that's important to make sure that you have a breeder that backs what they produce. But also, if, again, I'm answering this because originally I thought it was like, what do you look for in a dog, or what do you look for when you get a golden retriever, you know, puppy? So I think it's just important to make sure you have enough time to do training, not only at home but also in person with somebody. And don't wait. So as you guys have been seeing, like I literally started training Burley the day I got him. I started leash training him. I started reward training him. I started potty training him. Like literally, do not wait. That's the biggest piece of advice. And right now, even Banks, my son, who's a year and a half, is starting to help me feed him, right? So he's taking the bowl over, he's putting in the crate, he's shredding the crate, integrating them in with food, integrating them in with people, integrating them with skill sets and having them a part of that life. So it's really important to start early. It's really important when you're looking for a dog that's going to match your child that you have enough time to put in. So I would be looking for a younger dog that is moldable to grow up with a kid, and or if you're looking for a dog, a shelter dog or a rescue dog that has already lived with kids and has a history of living with kids, that's the other option. Those are the two things. Getting a dog young enough where they can grow up together and that's the life they live, you know, getting stepped on and moved and at the same level. I just wouldn't get a dog that doesn't have human baby experiences because that's where, you know, things can go south. So that's my answer. Next one comes from Winstonian T. First, thank you so much for the podcast. I appreciate the direct and honesty and advice you give. Second, I have sort of an odd question. How would you deal with a dog that barks and growls at and almost even bites when people show affection to other people, hugging, kissing, etc.? I assume it's anxiety, thinking they're being too aggressive. I would say it's probably more of, and I don't know the context. Like, I don't know if it's two adults and the dog and they own the dog, or it's just like in general, if anybody's hugging the dog, gets mad. I'm assuming it's just like the owner of the dog. And I would just say, it's probably more of a jealousy thing. And that's something that you should, like if the dog's jumping on you and biting you and all that stuff, you should be correcting that. That's not appropriate. Like if you go to hug your partner goodbye and your kid's sitting there kicking you in the shin saying, "No, don't," like that's inappropriate. You're going to address that. You're going to be assertive with that immediately. So it's the same thing you would do with a dog. Good question. Thank you for listening. Next one comes from Ish J. What next? "Hey Tom, love your podcast and the whole message. I started watching your podcast and said I want a dog and it's helped me so much since I got my puppy." Awesome. My question is where should I go with my training now? My puppy is 4 months old and the basic sit down, stay, place, and kennel. We train pretty much once a day and if not more, but starting to get repetitive and I'm just wondering. So think of the three Ds, distance, distraction, and duration. So this is the other part of the question. Whenever you answer, you always say you don't need all the background, but it'll be here for reference only if needed. He's about 60% red healer. Okay, cool. So think about the three Ds, distance, distraction, and duration. So when you're building, you'll see this with Burley as we develop. This is February 13th. The dog's probably older by now, and I apologize, but sorry, I'll answer it anyway. Distance, distraction, and duration. So think about the three Ds. So when you're doing the sit down, place, stay, what you're trying to do is make it better. Each time you're making it better. That's just like anything in life. Like, hey, Tom, I know how to throw the football now. I know how to kick the soccer ball. It's like, okay, get better. Get the placement better. Now do it with pressure. Now do it with defense. Now do it with a small hole. Like, that's the goal of obedience, is making things better with the three Ds, distance, distraction, and duration. All right, you guys, that's it for the rest. Actually, let me keep going on this because I want to get kind of caught up here. Victor Pagan, "Hey Tom, I love the podcast because of you guys. Like you and Will Atherton, my 10-month-old golden retriever is killing it. I wouldn't say she's a level 3, but she's definitely on her way. The only thing that I've been questioning is regarding her play towards other dogs. She regularly sees two dogs, other dogs, both that are well-trained, and I regularly have to recall her away from the dogs because she can get a little overbearing." I think the reality is she, you can't, again, I talk about this often, but you can't teach a dog how to play. You can advocate and say, hey, okay, it's too much. You can recall a dog away or stop a dog from playing if you feel like it's escalating and things are going to get like too aggressive. But the reality is if you send your dog off to play and she's being like too much for the other dogs, the reality is you should recall your dog from that and just say, okay, calm down, give him a break, and then send him back. Or just find a dog that matches your dog. That's the other thing. Find a dog that matches your dog's like craziness. Good question. Let me know if you need me to go back on that. Next one comes from Little Vampirite. Hey, Tom, I've been a loyal listener of your show for the last 2 years now. You have a wonderful pod and YouTube series that has helped me with my lab mix. To the point, I am someone who works at the shelter, high euthanasia rate. I was hired. They told me it was just over outrageous aggression or breeding health issues. But since working there, I've seen this not to be the case. Some of the sweetest potty trained loyal dogs who don't get adopted within 72 hours, they immediately put on the euthanasia list. We are a shelter that can't afford dog trainers. I understand both sides of the kill shelter argumentally, and personally would just really appreciate hearing from your opinion on the matter as a dog trainer. What's the question? We are a shelter that can't afford dog trainers, and I can't in good conscience leave all these pups behind. I walk around with your No Bad Dog hot on all day and just remind myself these. I've talked about this a lot as well. Shelters are absolutely heartbreaking. It's like the best place, but also the worst place for anybody that loves dogs, because you want to help them all. It's political. It's very, 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 very hard to deal with, just because we have so much empathy and passion and compassion and love for these dogs, and we want them to be successful, and we want them to get adopted, and we want to save their lives to some degree. And it's really challenging when you have not the support, or just even if you do have the support and you're the best dog trainer in the world, if 10 dogs come in and you adopt 12 the next day, you're just never going to be able to catch up, or vice versa. So I think that the shelter world in general is, again, it's set up, it's really tough. It's really tough to be successful under these circumstances. And I think it's important for you to understand that sometimes it's an uphill battle and there's nothing that you're going to be able to do to really combat that. Unfortunately, it's just the game that we get into. And that's something to really keep in mind as you're working in there and just devoting your life is, you know, and also just like find the right shelters, find the right shelter to work with, find the right people to work with, find the right volunteers to work with. All these things are really, really important because not everybody has the opportunity to work in a shelter that supports you and helps you and so on and so forth. So I hope that this is helpful for you, and I appreciate you listening, and good luck to you, and try to stay positive. Next one is best podcast, 100%. It's been a long time. Tom Davis offers invaluable insight and awesome advice for dog training. It really is my favorite podcast, and it's changed mine and my dog's life. Cool. And over the 6-year-old female mix, incredibly obedient, behaved. However, over the past year, she matured. We noticed the new behaviors that's been challenging for us. Yeah, when either my partner or I attempt to leave the house or the car, she gets really nervous and tries to hurt us. She will do this to our guests if we are not watching her and put her into a downstay as they leave. What happens is she whines and lets out a long bark and tries to nudge and muzzle us. She isn't trying to hurt us, or it seems like more like a small meltdown on her part. It occurs with a brief window, about 5 to 7 seconds, the process of leaving. Once we're out in the process of leaving door, she will stop if she can't see us. I think the best thing to do is just work on this. I know you probably have, but I would just work on this consistently and consecutively, just making sure that when you're doing this, like, don't wait for people to come over. Don't wait for you and your partner to leave. Literally work on this 50 times a day to start desensitizing your dog. The other thing that you can do is start rewarding your dog once they calm down with a, like, some sort of Bluetooth feeder, which is pretty creative that I just thought of. So you leave, your dog whines, they stop whining, bang, you click and pay them from a feeder. That's something that you can do as well. Cool. Next question comes from Girl with Mal. 5-star review, best podcast I listened to in a while. Hey, Tom, congrats on your new Borbo puppy. Really looking forward to watching the content growing up. My question isn't for my dog, but my father-in-law's dog. Well, tell your father-in-law to get in here and listen then. Nah, just kidding. My father-in-law has a very 2-year-old Husky Doberman. He's very high energy, stubborn, and opportunistic. saying that if you give him an inch, he'll take 3 miles. He has been through extensive training, including to board and train with the trainer and help him out regularly. He's off leash training, knows his commands. Where's the question? My question is, it's a good thing, guys, is like when you're doing this, please just let me know where the question is for my time's sake. My question is do you think that you can take your dog out too much? My father-in-law takes his dog out a lot, which is great, but the issue is that he can't settle at home or in public. He will constantly whine and pace. For an example, we would look at the boys for a couple hours, which included some of my off-leash time, and walked over 5 miles. Once he went their separate ways, he told me that he... Okay, yeah, I think that you could definitely put too much effort into exposing your dogs. It could make a dog anxious if they're constantly in motion. I also just think like good training, it's hard to say, but yeah, the answer is yes. That was the question. That's my answer. Next one comes from 17048. NBD, No Bad Dog is a wonderful resource. What Tom is doing. Thank you so much. It's just a review, no question. Thank you. Mego 711, life-changing podcast. My question is since conventional methods aren't usually effective with a, Tibetan Mastiff. Do you have any tricks or tips to get our obedience better with our new puppy? Our first was a female we got when she was 7 months old and wasn't very well socialized and pretty reactive. She turned out to be an amazing family dog, and we were finally starting to see some obedience progress when we sadly lost her right before she turned two due to an unsuspected congenital issue. I feel like since she died so young, we didn't get to fully go through the typical personality changes with the dog hits maturity. Since we research assist Tibetan Mastiffs, usually don't mature until 3 or 4. A new puppy is a male. I'm trying to look for the question here. Akita puppy in the house. And I really just want to make sure we both. Do you have any tips or tricks to getting our obedience better with a new puppy? No. It's like, the answer is no. I don't have any tips and tricks. I would just say, just do the obedience. If you've been having problems, I think the dog has to be motivated. I think that like I already posted a video on engagement. So start putting your dog through engagement exercises to get them to look at you and to get them to engage with you and know the game of work. I often find that dog owners will start, you know, training their dogs when there's problems or when the dog is already pulling, and don't do that. Just start with the engagement. Start with the process, you know. No tips and tricks, just start. Just get going. Okay, cool. We're just about caught up. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I will talk to you next time. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.